Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing Spirit Island, designed by R. Eric Roos, developed by Ted Vassanez, and there's a lot of artists, so I'm just going to say the names and not their games. Jason Benke, Kat G. Bermelin, Loic Bilau, Carrie Corain, Lucas Durham, Rocky Hammer, that is a name.
Yeah, that's the best name.
Sydney Druger, Nolan Nasser, Jorge Ramiro or Ramos, Adam Robitaro, Moro Rogers, Graham Sternberg, Shane Tyree, and Joshua Wright. It's going to be a lot of art in this game, I hope.
Yeah.
It is published by Greater Than Games. The description is, in the most distant reaches of the world, magic still exists, embodied by spirits of the land, sky, and every natural thing. As the great powers of Europe stretch their colonial empires further and further, they will inevitably lay claim to a place where spirits still hold power. And when they do, the land itself will fight back along with the islanders who live there. Spirit Island is a complex and thematic cooperative game about defending your island home from colonizing invaders. Players are different spirits of the land, each with its own unique elemental powers. Every turn, players simultaneously choose which of their power cards to play, paying energy to do so. Using combinations of power cards that match a spirit's elemental affinities can grant free bonus effects. Am I doing rules? Faster powers take effect immediately before the invaders spread the and ravage, but other magics are slower, requiring forethought and planning to use effectively. In the spirit phase, spirits gain energy and choose how, whether to grow, to reclaim used power cards, to seek new power, to spread the presence in the new areas of the island.
All right, that's the game. Let's play.
The mechanics are action, retrieval, area majority influence, cooperative game, hand management, modular board, set collection, simultaneous action selection, variable player powers.
Woo. What's and action retrieval?
I don't know.
I guess this is where we get to guess it, or do we
gotta
wait?
We gotta do the box. So the box art is some colonizing ships. I assume the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria heading to a rocky island with some elemental spirits projecting out of the top of the island.
Kind of like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes. But we're talking like...
Yeah, like 80s, I was thinking like 90s. Skeletor, He-Man,
Master of the Universe.
Yeah.
Gummy Bears,
but like the
G.I.
old
Joe.
School, are they did they have they revamped He-Man? And cuz I know they did She-Ra.
They are redoing it because apparently Mark Hamill has been cast as Skeletor.
Wow.
And then in the corner it says the Cooperative Settler Destruction Strategy Game.
Sounds fantastic.
All right. Based on all of that, would you pull it off the shelf?
I would. Well, one, it's cooperative. Two, settler destruction strategy game. Sounds pretty fantastic. And this one has been recommended to me by multiple people when I tell them what I like in games. So,
Kiwi?
Yeah, I remember seeing this one because Greater Than Games is the same company that makes Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing this when we played Sentinels at Gen Con. And this is a game that I really wanted to play because it looked interesting. Plus, just like BP said, with the cooperative, like we tend to like cooperative games more. Just, you know, we've talked about it in the past, but cooperative games tend to work better with our group. Not every group, but certainly ours. Yeah, I think I would pick it up.
Yeah, I've heard it's more of like a complex cooperative game. So more like a Robinson Crusoe, not in gameplay, but in terms of like complexity. So I think that might be interesting.
Yeah, based on the complexity rating on Board Game Geek, which, you know, we've established isn't always accurate, this will be the most complex game we've ever played.
Oh.
Wow.
Hope you're ready. Good Sunday morning.
Woo. Yeah.
So action retrieval. Each player has a set of actions available to them embodied in cards, tokens, or some other affordance. Once performed, they are spent and may not be performed again until retrieved. Action retrieval typically is itself an action or maybe an entire turn.
Oh, so it's like kinda, you burn cards and then you've got to like use an action to regain them kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. So I think I guess in that regard, Gloomhaven would kind of be action retrieval because you have to do the rest action in order to get your cards back.
Yeah.
Do we want to do it? How do we think it's played, BP?
Yeah, how do you guys think it's going to be played?
The most complex game we've ever played.
I know, right? Well, we just talked about cards, so I don't remember if card management was part of the things, but I'm assuming
hand management was.
Management. Okay, so we're going to have some cards. I think we're going to be assigned a role, like a spirit.
A spirit, right. And we're going to have special cards for that spirit because it's variable player powers.
Well, I think Kiwi, I don't know if I'm going to like mislead going off of the Kiwi Gloomhaven, but I kind of feel like maybe it's going to be about that, except...
Because it has simultaneous action selection. So I'm thinking we're all going to pick a card, mm-hmm. right? Like Gloomhaven, and we're all going to play it.
So is this just like a different Gloomhaven?
No, because then you've got area influence. So that means we're going to be like trying to control sections of the board. Probably as the settlers expand, we're going to be trying to fight them off on mm-hmm. the sections mm-hmm. of the board with our little spirit meeples.
Which kind of reminds me of Pandemic Fall of Rome.
So we're going to play cards. We're going to have to retrieve them back into our hand. We're going to simultaneously select them. We're set collecting. What are we collecting? Settlers? Dead bodies of settlers? I don't know.
Their riches? I don't know. Something where we are the spirits. So otherwise I was going to say something to please the spirits.
Yeah, we're the spirits. So yeah. So, and then I don't know. There's even more stuff in that top paragraph.
I think we've nailed it.
Yeah, I think we got it.
This is like a cross between Pandemic and Gloomhaven.
Yep. Let's play.
Yeah, between y'all's guess and Eric's description.
Yeah.
Oh, we got it. History. History of
show notes. So you gotta follow the show notes.
I read the first sentence, and then just because of what I've been prepping for my classes this week, I kind of went Shintoism, and then like thinking, then like the second sentence you have in there, right? European colonies. I mean, you could go the whole like imperialism. I don't know any, like, again, just the types of accounts. If we go new imperialism and thinking, especially about the scramble for Africa, would probably be kind of my thoughts along like some of the places along the western coast of Africa, and especially like south and east, or even the interior, that may have had less prior contact with Europeans before, may have still practiced some kind of indigenous religion that, right, kind of viewed nature as spirits. But just thinking of the elemental and having kind of natural spirits just really reminds me of Shintoism, and even the idea of blocking settlers, because Japan didn't necessarily resist Chinese influence in kind of its early medieval period, around about like, you know, 600 to 800, when China was really growing and sending a lot of its Buddhist monks, especially out through Korea and then through Korea down into Japan. Japan really did, instead of like fully being kind of assimilated into the greater Chinese cultural sphere, was really stringent about trying to practice its own kind of unique and maintain its own unique kind of cultural identity, and especially in religion. And so Shintoism, while it eventually got wrapped into some of the Buddhist philosophy, is still very much alive and practiced in much of Japanese culture. And like for that, it just kind of reminded me that idea of, since the base of Shintoism are the kamis and these spirits that are alive in kind of most natural things. And if you think about kind of that formative period of Chinese growing influence, and then Japan starting to consolidate and centralize its own authority and formulate then its own kind of articulate cultural history, it just reminds me. So I'm going to just think kamis and little shrines to kamis throughout this, and trying to keep the Chinese or the Europeans out of my Shinto shrines.
Unless you're Tom Cruise and you're the last samurai.
You had to ruin it.
Yeah. He ruins everything. That's what he's here for.
You guys want to know how to play?
Sure.
We already know.
I mean, we've guessed it already.
You guys were actually pretty close. All right. So the game is played over a series of rounds until the players win or lose. Yay. So just like any other co-op game, there's more ways to lose than there are to win. So in order to win, we have to meet the victory conditions of the current terror level. So as we kill and destroy, kill settlers.
Is the terror level like color coordinated? So we're orange terror level.
It is actually. They label it as a level one, level two, level three. But level two terror is has an orange card or a little chipboard. And then red is for terror level three. So for the first terror level, there can't be any explorers, cities, or towns on the map. Every time we destroy a explorer, city, or town, we create fear, and basically we're making it so the settlers or the people trying to settle the island are more fearful of the island, and it makes it easy for us to get rid of them.
Cool. So we want to create fear.
Yes, by killing people. The player, we will lose if all of our blight tokens are played. So essentially, as the explorers are going around, they're going to create blight on the land, and there comes a tipping point basically where they've created so much blight that we as the spirits can't recover the island. And that is the point where all the blight tokens have been played. If all of our spirit presence is destroyed, or if time runs out. So if we draw the last card of the invader deck, those are the three ways that we can lose. So we're going to play with the suggested first time rules, which is we're going to play with the blight complexity or the blight rules that are printed directly onto the main board. We're not going to use one of the blight cards. And we're also going to use, we're each going to get one of the four spirits that are listed as having a low complexity. And we're also not going to play with a scenario. So those are the ways to kind of up the ante and make the game a little bit harder. It's kind of like adding epidemic cards to your pandemic deck. So play is simultaneous. So there's no first player to select. Each round is broken up into five phases. So the first phase is the spirit phase. We're going to grow. So we're going to select one of the growth options from our spirit board. And it'll be things like gain more energy, gain more influence, get your cards back, add cards. So there's all different kind of things you can do to grow as a spirit.
You know, though, as you said that, I thought of like those little washcloth things or whatever that you throw in the water and then grow.
Oh, yeah. Or the little foam capsules.
Yeah.
All right. So we're little foam spirits.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then we're going to gain energy. So you're going to gain energy equal to your highest uncovered number on your energy presence. And then you're going to play and pay for power cards. So players can play a number of power cards equal to their card play track if you have the energy to pay for it. So if you can play three cards, but you only have the energy to play two, you can only play those two. Or if you have enough energy to play three, but you can only play one, you can only play one. And then those power cards are going to have icons. It's either going to be a bird for a fast power or a turtle for a slow power. And those are going to be played in different phases.
Not the rabbit?
So the second phase. Nope, not a rabbit. Bird. So the second phase is the fast power phase. And in that phase, we're going to resolve all the fast powers that were played by the players. Now, we can play them in whatever order we want, because some of the powers may play off of each other. And we can decide as a team, essentially, how we want to play them. Then we go to the invader phase. First, we have to ravage. So the invaders are going to do damage to each land that matches the invader card in the ravage position. So like if it's mountains, we're only going to deal with the mountain spaces. Each explorer deals a damage. Towns cause two damage and cities cause three damage. We also have little huts for the Dahan. Those are the indigenous people of our island. I guess essentially they are the ones who worship us and give us power, I suppose. Each one has two hit points, and if they're not destroyed, then after the settlers do damage, the Dahan get to do damage back as well. And if all of the Dahan on a space are destroyed and the explorers do two or more damage to the land, we add blight to the land.
Dun, then the dun, dun. Village,
yeah, then the invaders are going to build.
And then our potatoes are destroyed.
Yes.
It's so sad. I love potatoes.
Peasant food. Invaders build based on the land that matches the invader cards. So just like the Ravage, the invaders are only going to build on lands matches the card. If the land has more towns than cities, you're going to add a city, or else you're just going to add a town. And then finally, they're going to explore. So we're going to flip up the top card of the invader deck and put an explorer spot on each of those lands if the land has a city or town on it, or it's adjacent to a land with a city or town on it. Then we're going to advance all those cards to the left. So we'll discard. Then the fourth phase is we're going to play slow powers. It just works just like the fast power phase, except now we do slow powers. And then finally, the last phase. Yep, turtles. And then the final last phase is... All right.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
There's our Disney reference again. We nailed it.
Wait, they're not Disney?
Yeah, they are.
Disney owns everything. You might as well give
Disney
up.
Disney owns everything.
Now we have to Google to make sure.
Nickelodeon.
And when I watched... they owned by Viacom.
Nickelodeon. Well, that's cool. Okay.
Okay. All right. So I was wrong. Well, okay. All right. So now we get a cease and desist from somebody else.
Okay.
All right. So time passes. So players are going to discard all the power cards they played, all the elements. Some of the powers produce elements that get used up. So some will be like, hey, if you have two fire elements, you get to do damage. So it is sort of like Gloomhaven in that aspect, where some powers will do more or less based on what elements you have as a player. All invaders in Dahan that took damage but weren't destroyed go back to full health. And then we remove all the single turn effect tokens, which come from certain powers. And then we start a new round. And we just keep doing that constantly until the end game criteria is met. There's a little bit more to it than that, but I didn't want to talk for an hour.
How long has it been? It feels like an hour.
I've been recording for 20 minutes, but...
Oh, well, you know, time is relative.
Yes, especially when you're a spirit.
What was He-Man's, like, power cry?
Let's play?
As a question? Let's play.
I mean, if you're going to do it as a power cry, it should be something like, let's play!
Can you do it in the podcasting camel voice?
Let's play!
We just finished a game of Spirit Island. To recap, the spirits of the island instilled absolute horror and terror upon the colonists, who pretty much just died right there in their boots. Fuck them.
Shaking in them boots.
So we won, which I believe was a shock to all of us. Strategy? I think we were kind of just, I think we say this in a lot of them. In most of our cooperative games, we tended to be pretty reactive in the first couple rounds, I think. Mm-hmm. We were just trying to, what's being ravaged now? Try to stop that one. And then as we kind of started figuring it out, we started doing more of the slow cards to plan ahead.
I mean, did we actually play the slow cards to plan ahead? Or we were like, we mostly have slow cards. How do we use them to plan ahead?
I think, and we'll get into mechanics with that, but it's kind of a strength of the game. I think that they split it into fast and slow. So, you know, your fast cards are like, okay, what is the immediate threat? Okay, now I'm doing slow cards. What is my future threat? But I know the first round, I definitely played some slow cards, and then everything happened in the invasion phase. And I was like, oh, well, crap, that's not going to do what I thought it was going to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the first, and we even said it like two or three rounds in, where it was like, ah, crap, like we need to be thinking ahead to what is next and play our slow cards to affect those things. So I think there was a couple of rounds where, you know, we got into the round and there was just nothing we could do about what was about to get ravaged, because we had cards that didn't allow us to either shift around Dahan or defend on fast. And then I had like two cards that I basically played the same at two cards every time. So like I only took the reclaim action, which, I mean, let me spread out on the board.
It kind of works for your spirit though, because your reclaim is actually giving you presence. So it's a stronger.
Yeah. And I was a very defense heavy. I think that was like the only stat on the back of the board too, was.
Then let's back up and say, when we chose our players, we did initially, like, you guys let me go first. And I was like, oh, I want like this river one. And then Eric,
BP
we
and I like, both picked cool ones.
Yeah. And then we were like, oh, Kiwi, here you, we need defense.
Which I didn't mind. Like I said, I would go last and pick.
Yeah. So that's pay attention to our stats leading into it though, so we had a balance, because I did a lot of fear and
tons of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean a ton of fear, and then I guess control and offense by being able to push stuff around. Kiwi was like maxed out defense with a little bit of control, utility. I'm not sure what the utility would be.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
And mine was also the same, offense and control.
Yeah, you had a ton of control and utility.
Which is interesting that my card, I was River, Surges, and Sunlight, says so little fear, because I feel like most of my cards were like, if this, then add fear. And I feel like I still was doing like quite a good incremental amount of fear.
But I mean, like every one of my cards did fear. So I think everybody gets to do a little of everything. It's just that's like, you know, your primary is.
Yeah, we tried to balance going in. But I feel like personally, like, we were flailing at part of like towards the end. I feel like we were strategizing, like as soon, like when the stakes got higher and we were like, how many more rounds would we actually be able to make it through? We really did. Like, I mean, we flipped over things to be, you know, targets to be able to see the board more clearly. But it was just like, I feel like personally, it was a very reactive game strategy.
Well, I was going to say, I think once we figured out like, hey, we need to plan ahead. Like, I feel like we did okay for a couple rounds. And then all of a sudden it just sort of like piled on and it was just super reactive then, after that.
Well, I was still thinking ahead because I was still like, I would look at what are my available fast turn cards and I would use those. And then I would say, okay, now I need to play a slow card or two slow cards. What is my future? So I'd look reactive and then I'd look ahead. So you kind of do both.
That's true, because I knew most of my cards were slow, so I would always just be looking, okay, what's the next one coming up? Because I knew I couldn't target hardly anything in that phase. So we had some strategy.
I mean, we were flailing, but I think we had a little bit.
Yeah.
What do we think of the theme?
So Eric and I had this conversation a couple of days ago about the theme.
Okay.
I feel like there's a conversation in board gaming, at least with some folks, where the idea of colonization is bad.
Right.
Right. So just the theme in general, the ideas behind it, like all the issues that it's caused. Eric listened to it as well, but there was the most recent episode of Breaking Into Board Games had Calvin Wong. I think he's from Hong Kong. I could be wrong. It might be Singapore, actually. And so, you know, at the end of every episode, they always ask their guest, where do you see the board gaming hobby and industry going in the next 5 years? And Calvin's response was in the next 5 years, he really wants to see games that do not have colonization, period. Like, he doesn't want it as a theme. He doesn't want it like people giving lip service to it. He doesn't want people like reviewing the games. He just wants the theme just straight up gone from board gaming. And even like taking games that were, you know, his recommendation is, you know, it's okay to say like, take a game that has that theme and retheme it so that colonization is gone, still have all the mechanics. And he was like, it would be okay to say like, hey, this game is based on this game.
Yeah. Then just totally retheme.
But then remove colonization from the theme.
Interesting.
And I've seen arguments about Spirit Island in that same regard. Like, it still has colonization as part of the theme, even though it's the opposite. Like, we are trying to push these people off the island, but you still have that theme of colonization. There was a part of me where it was just like, I'm on board with, you know, making this not a theme. And like, cause there are definitely people out there that theme games the way they want to, like, and they always say like, oh, well, it was, you know, steeped in history and this is how history like sees it. People do that, you know, with all kinds of stories. And like, they use the history as a defense for
okay. As an historian, I have students constantly coming up to me and being like, oh, well, you're into board games too. Then you should, you know, there's this game and what you're teaching me reminds me so much of this game.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that, you know, because of that and the bad connotations that come with colonization, that makes me, I don't know if uncomfortable is the word.
It's unnecessary. And even if it doesn't make us uncomfortable, like the fact that people are playing in places that have gone through colonization,
it makes somebody uncomfortable.
But yeah, so I think the question is this one is like, okay, so they clearly portrayed the colonizers as the evil ones and you're trying to defeat them. But, you know, does that help the situation or is it just saying like, colonization, different take or something? I don't know.
Yeah, to me, it just seems like colonization with a different take. Like, you're still using the theme.
I mean, as you were talking, Kiwi, that's what I was thinking, was it is colonization is a different take. I do want to just, like, point out in how this game was introduced to me, besides when we were sitting at Gen Con that one time. Remember how, speaking of Gen Con, the last trip, I had my whole travel plans derailed by weather. And so I drove right halfway across the country with a bunch of strangers. And for part of the ride, we were just talking about games that we wanted to play, mechanics that we liked, even though I'm not very into mechanics. This was one of those games that was brought up for me because one of the things I had said I really like was cooperative games. And the person who was recommending it was that it took this different approach to colonization settlers. And they were like, as we're talking about you as an historian and how you approach it, like, you might like this. So from a certain perspective, as the historian who encounters, in fact, students who come from places that were colonized by Europeans, I do, to a certain extent, there is that interest in it. Yeah, and seeing a different aspect, for at least from that teaching perspective, because we just, in fact, in one of my classes had this crazy discussion about the slave trade in the 18th century. And like, most of my white students were like, one of the texts, they were like, I can't believe this. And then it was like one of my Ghanaian students who were like, this person that is portraying this kind of not really pro-slavery view, but she was just like, maybe it's not so bad because of these 18th century, like, Christianization, like, kind of ideals, right, that are totally racist. But I want students to be able to understand what that other perspective is. And I feel, and, you know, like, be able to listen to what the other side is before shutting it down. And maybe this is one of those right. approaches. But, like, I'm totally attracted to whatever this guy,
Calvin Wong.
Yeah. So now I want to, like, listen to the episode just to hear him talk about it.
My thing is, like, okay, so clearly people make a bunch of colonization board games and they think this is a super fun theme and they don't really think about it because they're white guys and they probably don't think about it. That, to me, this is a game that was like, well, hey, we're going to take your colonization theme, turn it upside down and say it's bullshit. People aren't going to realize it's bad and stop doing it until there's, like, people who say, hey, it's bad, stop doing it. And I think that was the goal of this game, or not the sole goal, but the goal of the theme. As it gets to, we're getting to the point where everyone knows, like, this is a really dumb theme, stop it. Then the kind of going back to this kind of game is like, well, is this one necessary? But I think if you go to, like, when it was made, there has to be things out there to challenge the perspective and make people realize, oh, maybe all of our games, we should do something that is less offensive to some people.
Well, I mean, it goes back to why Monopoly was created in the first place, right? Like, one, she created it to introduce the idea of a single land tax because she was one of those progressives that were like, hey, we need to put money into the system to be able to pay for social services. But then she was also like, hey, you know, it's the late 19th century and there's all these robber barons in early 20th century. And we need to, like, figure out that this type of greed is just
right.
wrong.
But then the problem with that is, like, you have to have these things that point out what is wrong. But when you move past there, now you look right. at Monopoly and like, well, that's a game about greed. So it, like, loses the point that it had made when it came out, kind of thing. So I think that's probably right. where this is falling right. into. It was making a statement that needed to be made. But now it's kind of like, well, it's still promoted or it still has colonization in it. And my thing, I assumed you were going to lose. And I was going to be like, well, it's anti-colonization, but the Europeans still won. But We actually won, so I don't get to say that. But yeah, like, and to me, like, this reminds me, it makes me think Princess Mononoke, which, even though I don't know that's colonization, it's still the same thing of, like, people ravaging land and spirits defending it.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because when I was initially trying to think of a history lesson, I did think of, who is the guy who does all those movies? Starts with a G,
Studio
right?
Ghibli is the...
Yeah. Animator, right? The primary or whatever.
Well, I think it's
director.
I think the director is somebody else, but Studio Ghibli is the one that does it. It's
but I was thinking of Spirited Away, the movie.
Same guy did that one too.
Yeah. It's the same studio.
Miyazaki.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of thing of, like, to me, like, hey, we're pointing out it's bad. So I don't know. I'm kind of, like, I get it. I get the thing of, hey, it's still about colonization. Do we need this? But I also understand why they went this direction with the game, to say, like, hey, here's the problem with settlers, get down.
I mean, when you put it with Settlers of Catan too, in that like scenario, I mean, Settlers of Catan is like one of the gateway games that many people get into when they get into board games. And I feel like it may still then be relevant in this line. Like, again, it may still be this colonization theme, but it's going to take a long time to, I think, that get that out of people's systems.
People start with Settlers of Catan and like, hey, that was a super fun game. And they don't think about the right, theme aspect of it. And then they play this, you know, shortly after, you'd be like, hey, wait a second. It might trigger people to think about the problem.
And Calvin Wong is from Malaysia. I wanted to make sure we got that right.
Okay.
So ignoring all of that part of it, how did we actually feel about how the theme played into the game?
I mean, the way the mechanics worked and the different powers and spirits and all of that, I thought, you know, all of that stuff did go well into the theme. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like I was a spirit trying to remove people.
Yeah, because you're controlling kind of the Dahan, the indigenous people, I guess, to the island. And you're sort of like trying to get them to fight. To me, I think the key thing is I really felt like we were being invaded and it was a real struggle to not be overrun, which I think it really captured that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it wasn't even like trying to get the Dahan to fight the wrong way. Like there were definitely times where we talking about like I almost felt like we were trying to remove the invaders, but also trying to protect the Dahan as much as possible. Yeah. Cause there were times where it's just like, ooh,
we
like,
just
we're
lost
gonna
a
lose.
Dahan. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I felt really bad when a Dahan like village went away and it was just like, we are the, you know, the spirits that they worship,
look up to.
Yep. I'm not sure how to word that without sounding super.
It's an interesting thing because Westerners view certain things as religions versus like philosophies. And yeah, it's, I think this is one of those things that.
Yeah, we just don't have the right words for it. But I think it's interesting because really our one resource is the people, which I think is super interesting compared to a colonization game where you're collecting all the actual resources. But like all we cared about was the people.
I also just want to say that I got to play the Tsunami, which was,
that was
super
pretty,
fantastic.
That was a pretty epic card.
I know.
I mean, it basically won us the game.
And as a water spirit, like I feel like when you have invaders into your land, that if that's your only like recourse as like a last action, because it was also like if I had had Dahan left on those property, like I would have lost them. So it's definitely one of those cards that makes you think like, if these are my people I'm trying to protect, I have to sacrifice some of them for the greater good.
How about the art, BP?
I thought the cards were awesome. Like, especially when we I think both Eric and I, as we like to do, Kiwi was explaining, hey, here are your like person cards or whatever. And like, we were both like, no, let's just look at all of them and read them. And They were fantastic. Like Kiwi being his guardian person is this character that just looks kind of Gollum-esque, but reminds me of, again, thinking of the studio.
Ghibli.
Anyway, I mean, they're super cool. I mean, the river thing is like these bunch of like dragon-like looking creatures coming out of the river. Eric's nightmare is definitely like fire. There was one of the advanced characters that reminded me of Predator. That definitely the character cards really play into this elemental aspect. I mean, some of the power cards were also pretty cool. The board itself, I mean, it's clear, but I mean, the power cards, I felt like also tried to get into the theme of your character. So I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, power cards are kind of hit or miss for me. Some are really cool. Some of them are kind of meh, but you know, I think that's pretty common. The character cards are awesome. It's not necessarily art, but just the names of the cards. I think that's what got me was like some of the names of the cards. Like I really felt like, oh, this is so cool. I'm like Mantle of Dread and the crops wither and fade. And they just really play into it all really well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was looking at the cards at the bottom left. It reminds me of Magic and then also Call to Adventure. With all the cards. So they had tons of artists in Call to Adventure as well. So almost all of these spirits have all been, they all have different artists. Some of the artists have done more than one, but for the most part, it's all different artists. So it's kind of cool to see the mashup because it makes the spirits very unique. So you don't have one you know, the spirits aren't all in the same style, which kind of really adds to the uniqueness of each one. And so that's pretty cool.
Mechanics, Kiwi. There's a lot of them.
I thought the mechanics worked well with the theme that we had going. And I like, once we got into the hang of it, the mechanics flowed pretty easy.
One of the big things earlier that I kind of alluded to was that, like, you have your fast and your slow powers. And so I think in a lot of cooperative games we talk about, there's the, like, the planet or the reactive and the reactive or proactive. And so, like, usually we're like, oh, we really got to think ahead. But it's like this one, it kind of gives you that clear, there's going to be two phases where you do both. And it, like, really, I think it really helps you kind of think about it that way of being like, okay, I do need to be reactive because things are about to happen. But I also want to be proactive and at least reduce the things I have to worry about in the next reactive part. So I think the fact that they kind of split it out into two distinct phases was really smart.
Yes.
Which I don't think we've seen anywhere.
And then broke those phases up with
the invader. And then, you know, the actual core of the enemy part happens in the middle of those two phases. So it does take, it takes a little while to get a hang of, because like I said, at first we're like, I'm going to play this card, and then everything happened. I was like, well, oh well.
Yeah.
You know, I think once you get the hang of it, then it kind of really helps sort of organize what you have to do in a cooperative game like this.
I have two things. One, Laputa Castle in the Sky was the movie I was thinking of. Two, that idea making you think ahead. I think, again, when we think of the complexity of this as what we had when we started off, there is definitely that element. So I don't know if this is an entry level game because, I mean, to be successful anyway, like I was thinking about that in the middle of the game, whereas Pandemic, we do use as kind of this entry level game for at least Kiwi and I have for some of our family and friends, like, hey, this is fun. It's cooperative. We're trying to, you know, stop the spread of pandemics together. This, I think, because there is that multiple stage, and even at one point where we had to, like, all three of us, like, sit and visualize how this might play out, you want to keep that in mind when you think about the mechanics, is that there is definitely going to be a lot more strategizing. Maybe also think about your game players. Yeah. Like, there was this point where I was like, ugh, would analysis paralysis people, like, kill this game, you know? Like, I don't know. What do you guys think on that? Like, this is not my strong point.
Yeah, we tend to act pretty quick. So I can't, and we were taking some serious thought on these things. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think the big difference between this and, like, Pandemic is you only, in the base game of Pandemic, you only have the four actions that you can, well, there's a couple more, but like the four primary actions, and it's the same actions every time. There's no growth, like nothing, it doesn't change.
Right.
You get four action points. The type of actions that you can take never changes. So it's easy to kind of teach that. And within a couple rounds, you can kind of see like, okay, this is what we need to do in order to be successful. And then you can ramp it up by changing the number of epidemic cards. I felt like with this, because of the powers, and we were playing it on easy mode, right? Like power progression, low complexity spirits. Like I haven't even looked at the high complexity spirits yet just to see like what is the difference between the two. You know, we had the power progression cards, which tells you like, okay, take this power and then this power, then this power. You know, in the actual game, or, you know, the non-easy mode game, you draw four and you have to select one of those four. But then the crazy part is, those three that you don't, they don't go back in the deck. They go into a discard pile.
Oh.
So like it could be something that'd be really good for another spirit. So yeah.
And that, like, I thought it had a really good build up too. Like at first we're like, oh, okay, there's things coming in. And then it was like, oh God, there's so many. But then our terror also went up. So that kind of gave us an advantage too, where those level three terror powers were strong.
Yeah, they were definitely saved us, I think.
Rules. BP, how'd you feel about learning the game?
I mean, I think it took us a couple rounds, like we've said already, to learn how to strategize. There were some things that Kiwi had to look up rules. I think some of the wording led us to some of those workups. So, I mean,
yeah, the wording they kept super simple in terms of like two icon. Do this icon, push this.
Yeah.
But even then, yeah, like you said, there was still some like, well, what is, I think it was more an issue of like, there's so many icons and so many, like, what is, you know, gathering, pushing.
When do we get to do this? And when do we get to do that? Or like, does the fast only initiate on fast for innate powers versus slow?
Kiwi?
This rule book is rough.
Yeah.
I was not looking forward to teaching this game. It took me a while to work through the rule book. I don't like the way it's laid out. There are a couple examples that help a little bit, but it starts off with like the little stuff that you do each round. And then it's like, okay, for more information on this, go to this page. For more information on this, go to this page. And like, it's not all in the same, like I want, if there are five phases, I want to work through each phase. And in that section of the rule book, I want all the stuff related to that phase. And that this rule book is not laid out like that. I had to watch. Thankfully, they had a Greater Than Games did make a video on how to play, and it helped a little bit. But yeah, this rule book was not good.
That's interesting, because how was Sentinels of the Multiverse rule book?
That one is okay. But the other thing is when I read the rule book, somebody else had already taught it to us.
Right, I was going
to
say we'd already
a demo
played
game
it.
Of that.
Yeah.
So it was a lot easier to understand because we'd already played it. This is not that way. Yeah. Like the other day when I was like, I don't have the notes yet. I had to like, cause I, you know, I would open the rule book and I would start reading and then I would close it because it was just like, nope, I don't want to do this.
That's too bad. I mean, thinking of, I feel like what the creators are trying to do with the game that then to make it so complex that then people might not.
Yeah.
Play interaction. It's cooperative. It's hard to quarterback because, or whatever we call it, everyone's got so much stuff going on. It's hard to tell with our group, but
it's probably a little bit harder than, say, Pandemic with the very few choices.
Right.
You have to know the powers of the other spirits that you're with. And we also played where the cards were all laid out. So like anybody could look at any cards. But with hand management, you wouldn't be doing that. You would be looking at your own cards. So like no one would know what cards you have. So I feel like the quarterbacking would be more difficult because the only thing that is a known is the starting four cards that you have for each of the characters.
Yeah. Everything else would kind of be randomized.
Everything else would be random, especially based on, you know, if you were doing the draw four, choose one for the powers.
I'll say organizationally again, like I like that there's kind of each one of us has a primary board basically. And so It's another good way to organize your thoughts in terms of like, okay, let me look at my stuff first and see what my situation is. And then I'll look at yours and help you out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is I was more focused on what was going on my section of the board than really what
you
guys
were
doing.
But that's like step one is check your own shit. But then you wouldn't win if everybody played their own board. So then you kind of work together.
Yeah. Well, because some spirits just wouldn't be able
to
do that.
I struggled a lot with the wetlands because I can't, all my powers are mountains and forests and stuff. So, Yeah. And like I said, like, you know, I was doing a lot of fear and I just didn't have the defense and stuff. So Kiwi had to help me out a lot with defense and BP was moving people all over the board. So like we still did the whole board. But you also kind of were able to focus on one section of it, which I think is super helpful in a game like this complex. Would you play it again, BP?
Yes, I liked it a lot. I mean, especially the artwork. And I like cooperative games. So, yeah, I'd definitely be interested in playing it again.
Kiwi?
I wish it had a different theme. We've already talked about it. I don't know. It feels wrong to say all that stuff and then say, yeah, I would play it again, but I liked how all of the mechanics went together, even if I didn't like the theme.
Right.
So I would play it again.
Yeah, I'd play it again. It might be the strongest. Like I said, I like games like Robinson Crusoe where they're just ridiculously difficult. So it kind of fit that in terms of cooperative. I think like we discussed, the theme maybe should go away, but maybe it also is still helping people understand that pointing out that it's bad. So maybe it still serves a purpose, but I wouldn't question anybody who said it didn't. I mean, I'd play it again. So that is your Settler Destruction strategy game.
Spirit Island. If you have any other recommendations for cooperative games, or you have your opinion about the complexity of this, or your opinion of even like colonizing games, please send them our way. Email is firstturntabletop@gmail.com. And we are on Twitter, Instagram at firstturncast. I'm trying to get the podcasting camel, He-Man style. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers.
No towns or cities. We can have explorers.
Well, almost there, guys. We've almost got it.
Nightmares. Send them nightmares.
That's I don't think we can cause. Right. It would have to be almost 12 fear per round.
So what you're saying is there's a chance.
I mean, there's a chance they might just leave.
All right. And that, and we win. We win.
No way!
Fear deck. Victory win revealed.
Do, 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 do,
quite
do,
the roller coaster.
By the power of Grayskull, let's play!
It was great. I just don't know what He-Man has to do with Spirit Island.